Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 239 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Monday evening, early evening, I should say, and we're actually recording this before the Braves play baseball tonight, which is not normally how we would handle things, but the trade deadline expired at 4 p.m., and to chronicle all that did not happen in advance of the deadline, Eric Cole is here to lament what transpired. Hello, sir.
Brad, as always, I look forward to having the internet yell at both of us, as well as the team, for on all spectrums, both as being, you know, just sycophants for the team that just want to apologize, as well as for hating the team. I'm sure we will hear from both after this podcast, and I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I made a joke about this on Twitter on Monday morning, but I got accused by noon of carrying the water for ownership and Alex Anthopoulos, which I thought was hilarious given my track record of not doing that. And then by the end...
Known optimist, Brad Roland.
Yeah, and then by the end of the day, you and I are both convinced that we're going to be accused of being haters or being too negative on this podcast. So,
oh, it's coming.
The truth's somewhere in the middle, but alas, here we are. Broadly speaking, the Braves, of course, did nothing on Monday. They did make a move earlier to acquire Tommy Malone. We will discuss him momentarily, but at the very least, that move was not a splash. It was a potential depth piece that they added. And in advance of the deadline, there was some buzz. There were some actual rumors with Mike Clevinger, the biggest name on the market in terms of pitching. But he went to San Diego, and the Braves turned around and did nothing, essentially. And Alex Anthopoulos spoke to the media. He gave some thoughts that were mixed, I would say, potentially pretty frustrating. And, you know, sometimes I look at this, and generally all things about the Braves, from a pretty level-headed mindset. I like to be analytical about it. I like to look at it sort of detached and not try to put myself always in the fan shoes. But this time around, and Anthopoulos actually acknowledged this too, you know, as a fan, he kind of saw this coming about how people would be frustrated. I think if you're a Braves fan today, you should not be very happy with what transpired. And that's not something I say lightly. I think this is pretty rough. It doesn't mean the sky is falling. Like, I'm not going to come on here and tell you that the season's over and, you know, fire Anthopoulos and all that stuff. But on the scale, this is a pretty bad outcome, in my opinion, for Atlanta. I don't like to set the world on fire, but I would be pretty frustrated if I was a fan of this team right now in general. And I think that not upgrading at all is certainly not in line with what you would hope for a team that is winning its division and theoretically contending for the World Series, to go in with a dire need. And this is not our opinion. Everyone agrees on this. The Braves do not have a playoff level rotation, much less a World Series winning rotation right now. I know they're gonna make the playoffs anyway because they've been so good at everything else, but if you remove Max Fried and one star Ian Anderson, there's not a lot there, and to go out and do nothing is pretty maddening when there was that one hole to fill and they didn't fill it. That's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I want to preface make the same disclaimers that you had, which was that, one, this is still a good baseball team. They're playing well, the record's good, they are in first place. I also want to say that I'm not saying that they should have gone and gotten Clevinger, because there's things about specific negotiations we don't really know. If Cleveland was like, it's Drew Waters or bust, and Atlanta just said, that's not a guy that we're giving up, is there another deal? And this Cleveland wouldn't move off of that, I can respect that decision, because ultimately acquiring a guy of Clevinger's caliber is a big deal. And I don't want to say that that's just the deal they should have made, because that's an easy cop out almost, right? And like, there are some non-cooperative should have been partners, like the Rangers, for example. That's a team that should have been like more available at the trade deadline, and instead they just didn't move anybody to anywhere. And that's a fundamental problem, and I get that this is a challenging trade market. But when you don't do, you basically, you make a move for Tommy Malone for basically nothing. You know, we don't know who the two players to be named are going to be, but given that they're not in the player pool and they haven't been named yet, we can assume that they're not going to be crazy names, especially for a rental like him. If you don't do anything, and then like the first words out of your mouth, which is what it was in Topless's case, which was it wasn't financial, it was talent. It comes across as disingenuous to me because one, it makes me feel like that's the first thing you need to say, because you know that one of the cheapest things that people are going to say is that this is just Liberty Media being cheap, and that it feels like that's a kind of a prepared scripted thing. Like, hey, make sure you tell them that it's not financial. And then when you go on to say that we just didn't want to give up the talent, and then you think about what the ramifications of that are for what the other decisions the Braves have made this season, which is they have a player pool full of players, including a lot of pitchers on that 40-man roster. And they have continued to trot out retreads and guys who are just clearly not built for it, and throwing bullpen games. While you have guys like Tucker Davidson, Jaceel De La Cruz, up until recently Ian Anderson, and you just let them sit there in Gwinnett, play in scrimmages, and that talent is so valuable to you that you can't trade them, but they're not valuable enough to make you win your baseball games this year, is an incredibly frustrating thing, and it makes your argument sound silly. Because again, we can talk about service time, we can talk about all those considerations, they might not be quite ready, but any evaluation of how ready a prospect is going to be very, very nebulous this year because of the situation. There's not live baseball being played at the minor league level. So at the end of the day, you just have to make a decision like, hey, are we going to give this guy an opportunity in the shorter season or not? And if you're starting to make decisions about service time and not trying to put a product on the field that is passable in terms of the rotation, but then talk about how much talent you have in the minor leagues that you're not utilizing, or if you're going to talk about wanting to put the best offense on the field possible with your lineup and trotting out Matt Adams and Ender Inciarte while you have one of the best position prospects in baseball sitting on your bench doing nothing, not getting ready at the alternate site and actually getting playing time if you wanted to say he wasn't ready and developing. I understand that they had to make the move, but that's also like not long after they just sent Scott Schluber just off the roster for reasons. Again, we don't even know why he was on it to begin with. The decision-making process that's happened this year has not been logically consistent. And people have an expectation that when a lot of things go wrong with your rotation and yet your team overperforms, that the front office is going to back that team up by making decisions to try to help that team win. And they did not do that this trade deadline. There were a lot of difficulties with this trade deadline, and I've been the one saying it for a while. I was always skeptical of big moves and a lot of moves simply because of between the financials and, you know, just how much time you're going to be expecting to get from a guy that you're going to be, you know, from rentals and what the price would be and all that other stuff. I get all that. But we can only make so many excuses for how long this Braves organization has held on to prospects that they probably should have moved already. It seems like every offseason we've said, hey, you know, we need to be moving some of these guys. There's too much of a logjam here. Or, hey, they need to start cashing in some of these chips to improve in other areas or to get more help that's like major league ready. And you can't tell me that they wouldn't have takers for that. It was every trade deadline, every offseason. We had some activity for bullpen arms last season. We haven't seen offseason trades. I don't know what the Braves are doing. What are we doing? Like, you don't get points for keeping – you don't keep points for how many starting pitching prospects you can have in AAA.
Yeah, I mean
– you just don't.
People know that I've said this before, but I'll say it again for anybody that might be new listening. I am generally in favor of cashing in prospects, especially non-elite prospects. And to your point, they've just kind of never done that. And, you know, I've defended Anthopoulos in the past. I think as recently as like last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, Scott was upset and I was on the other side of that one. And honestly, this, I feel like it's kind of indefensible. I know, you know, if you're trying to form a case for why the Braves didn't do anything, and this is not, I don't mean this, but just playing devil's advocate, you know, there's the weirdest of the season, the weird expanded playoffs, they're already down Soroka, maybe they feel like that they're not actually a contender, even if they make a move. That's one way to put it. Also, you mentioned the financial aspect, and Anthopoulos did say that it wasn't financial, but quite candidly, he has to say that whether it was or not.
Absolutely.
I am someone who does, I'm not telling you that it was financial, but it's certainly him saying that it was not financial does not mean it was financial, if that makes sense.
And it almost makes it feel like it might have been financial.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
they said it out loud without anyone asking. Yeah.
It's just a bit, I mean, and honestly, you know, somebody mentioned, I tweeted something about that, and one of the responses was, you know, how about the shop on every aisle comment? And, you know, obviously the economics have changed since then. The pandemic has happened. Baseball has changed this year. I'm not sure Liberty Media, I know Liberty Media has buckets of money, and I've always been ranting about the fact that they shouldn't have a hard and fast payroll anyway with that kind of conglomerate. But regardless, financially, it could have been some situation where they didn't want to do it. And Thopolis did say that, you know, the players that were most interest to other teams were the guys on the major league roster already, which could refer to anybody. It could refer to Tukey. It could refer to Austin Riley. It could refer to any number of guys. But regardless, I have a hard time selling doing nothing whatsoever. I mean, I'm not someone who was going to come on here regardless today and say, you know, they didn't trade for Clevinger. What a bust. Because Clevinger is an awesome pitcher. The asking price.
But that's a hard deal.
Right. Yeah. It is. I mean, I know, trust me, I'm aware that the Indians took a very strange offer from the Padres. They took this, like, they got to hold on to all of their prospects, all their top prospects, the Indians seemingly prioritized a trio of, like, pretty uninspiring young major leaguers. But regardless, the Clevinger thing is almost to the side. Just not doing anything is indefensible to me. I know they added Tommy Malone, but Tommy Malone wasn't going to do anything. And regardless, even if Tommy Malone worked out, and he still could, even if it's just the one start was bad, I get all that. Even if he works out, he's working out as like a fifth starter type. That's what Tommy Malone is. In a playoff series, which, again, this team has not won a playoff series since 2001, that is the goal. When you are as good as the Braves are, the goal... I mean, the World Series is actually the goal, but regardless, like the more practical goal is like go out and win a playoff series, take the next step. Right now, at this moment, the Braves have 1.5 starting pitchers, and that's if you hope Ian Anderson is actually the guy he was in his first start, which he might be. But we've seen him pitch once in the major leagues. Max Fried cannot just do everything for you, and not doing anything to fill that. And to your point, to bring it all full circle, the mixed messaging is what drives me crazy as well. I'm glad you brought it up, because on one hand, they refuse to cash in prospects. And I'm not telling you to trade Pache, but like to cash in any prospects, really. Any of your top 10 prospects. They won't do it, but at the same time, they'll turn around and not play these guys, or they'll be on the shortest leash imaginable. Like no one would tell you that Kyle Wright and Tukey have been good this year, but those guys are somehow on a shorter leash than Robbie Erlin. And like, I don't get that. It doesn't make any sense to me that you would turn around and not give these guys a chance, because, you know, if nothing else, they actually have upside. That might be bad right now, but we know Robbie Erlin's not going to pitch a game two in a playoff series and you'll be happy with that. Like even guys that we have been skeptical of, like even guys like Fulte and Newcomb, who Anthopoulos brought up today, as like sort of like, oh, look, guys, we still have Fulte and Newcomb. No one's impressed by that. But even those guys have more upside than Robbie Erlin and Josh Tomlin. Or like, you know what I mean? There's just not it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to put both sides on the same track. You have to explain to me how you won't cash in prospects, but you also won't play your prospects. Unless you just absolutely have to.
Yeah. And I just, it's hard for me to understand. Like you talk about how much talent, I mean, like it's not like that, you know, they're like these like little known guys. Like maybe they hadn't considered this. I mean, like Tucker Davidson's like a really good pitching prospect, and maybe he's, you know, there's stuff going on with him that we just aren't aware of, which is entirely possible. But I don't think that like the five pitchers that are on your 40-man roster that have not made your major league debuts yet, that not one of them is worthy of a major league call up over starting Josh Tomlin again, or running Robbie Erlin out there again, or, you know, seeing if Enoa can start, you know, again, either we're thinking about service time considerations when we shouldn't be this year, or question mark. Like I don't understand what we're trying to do. No one's asking you to take these like giant leaps of like guys that aren't on the 40-man roster and haven't played above high A. right? Like, these are guys who are like AAA experience, AA experience.
And we're also not saying, again, we're not saying they had to go all in here. We're not saying they had to go get Clevinger. I'm not even telling you that they had to go trade for Lance Lynn. But to come out of today and not add another arm, like any arm, if they had added Mike Minor, if they had added someone like that, if someone that was even less impressive than Mike Minor, like another Tommy Malone is probably too low of a bar, but someone who you could actually convince me could pitch game three of a playoff series, that would have been a situation where I would have come on and defended that decision. Yes, it's frustrating that Clevinger was got for a pretty reasonable package today, but Lance Lynn didn't get traded. You know, all the big, big guns other than Clevinger didn't get traded. And obviously there is something to Anthopoulos' assertion that there are so few sellers that it's hard. I actually do buy that to some degree.
Yeah, but, to an degree, sure.
But you cannot, I mean, I'm not the guy who pounds the table, but it's maddening to me that you would come out of this deadline in the position the Braves are in, because the Braves are in a commanding position to where they're in the mid 90% range on making the playoffs. You know, I'm not saying that they're going to be better than the Dodgers, because they're probably not going to be, but in the playoffs, anything can happen, and you're just not giving you're not really giving yourself a chance. I will say this now before we keep ranting.
Not the best chance, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this now before we keep ranting, but the way to make this feel better, and this is something that I don't think they'll actually do, the way to sell this a little bit more would have been to come out tonight or come out on Tuesday and start and call up Pache and decide to just go young the rest of the way. And hear me out here. This is sort of just a wild theory, but if they just like, you know what, we're going to let Kyle Wright and Tukey fail. We're going to let those guys go for the next month. They want to talk up Folty. We're going to call Folty back up and see what happens with Folty, or even Newcomb, who I don't buy. Like, the way to sell this, now that you've held on, is that, you know what, guys? We genuinely thought we have enough arms. We have enough bodies coming back. You want us to trade a prospect? Here's Christian Pache. We're going to play Christian Pache now. Or we're going to go back young. Like, the worst-case scenario, and again, I feel like I'm piling on Robbie Erlin. I'm not. But the worst-case scenario is to go out twice a week or three times a week with, like, the equivalent of a bullpen game and try to convince the fan base that that's going to work. they're not even being creative with that. Like, there's a way, and I tweeted about this the other day, and I can't remember who said this first, so my apologies, but you know, if it was a game three right now in a playoff series, and that's you cross your fingers on Ian Anderson number two, but game three, I would probably piggyback Kyle Wright and Josh Tomlin in game three. But they're not even doing that. They're not going out and like getting creative or going piggyback or giving Wright a chance or giving Tukey a chance to thrive. They're not doing that.
They're not piggybacking. They're not like an opener. They have like the bullpen that might make sense to do an opener to. Won't do that. I mean, like,
it's bad. And we're not trying to pile on. I promise. This is not what I think people that listen to us regularly know that we're not trying to come on and crap on them. But it would be disingenuous for me to come out here and try to defend this, because I think it's kind of indefensible. I mean, there are things.
And even them explaining like Folty and Newcomb and Hamels was hedging, because they're like, hey,
yeah,
Hamels' arm hasn't fallen off.
That is prime spin.
Sometime.
I mean, AA is very good at this. I will give him credit for this. He is good at spin. But to come out, if you're paying close attention, the fact that AA spent real time in his post-deadline press conference extolling the virtues of Folty and Newcomb and Bryce Wilson and saying that these guys are all making strides, Newcomb's making tweaks, Folty's adding weight and velocity. Like, that all may be true. I'm not saying it's not, but that's spin. It is that at this moment in time, that is spin. That's like, all right, guys, look over here and hope that this is going to work. Like, Hamels, sure, you've already paid Hamels. You've been talking about him maybe being ready in September. Maybe that'll happen. We've left it open for that the entire time. I get all that.
They even talked about, hey, you know, he's scheduled to throw a bullpen and we'll see how it goes. And the last time they said that, they put him on the injured list the next day.
Right. And it's fine.
And I'm not
even closing the door. The thing is, Hamels, there's a chance that Hamels helps you. There's a chance that Folty finds something. That's all on the table. But this is not the time to be like, you're trying to sell this to me, to the average fan. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's
Well, I guess my thing about the Hamill situation is like they keep mentioning his name as if it's not September tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, how long does it take to stretch a guy out?
As people
you know
listen
what I mean?
To this
like,
now, like, yeah, I mean, that's the best case scenario possible for Hamels at this point in time is he makes a start or two at the end of this month, and he might be able to give you five innings max in a playoff game. Like,
maybe
that's the best case scenario for Cole Hamels at this point in time, which the Braves would take at this point because they just need somebody.
Well, I mean, they might just take whatever innings they'll give him just because,
and the thing
you know,
is, he might, he also might,
they might
be
run his arms off.
Like,
yeah,
that's
we don't
about,
know if he's going to be good.
Right. This is not a guy who you can just assume is going to be awesome. Regardless, it's just you're coming in at the end of August. This, I know it's a shortened season. And listen, we were, at least I said this, I'm not sure if you did too, but you know, a month ago, I said I wasn't sure what the Braves were going to be able to do at the deadline if they needed to make an upgrade because, look, it's a weird season. They're not, there aren't that many sellers. This is not a typical all-in year. Obviously, the Padres decided they were going to go all-in, but the Padres...
They went wild.
But, the, you know, and that's... The Braves could have done that, but the Padres have more prospects than the Braves do. I know the Braves have a pretty good system. You are the expert on that versus me, but by all accounts, the Padres have this incredibly loaded system, so they have a little bit more flexibility. And by the way, they didn't trade any of their top guys, like any of them.
Yep. Kylie McDaniel talked about the Padres and said, you know, people were talking about how the Padres went all in, and he disagreed because he said after he kind of looked at it for a bit, he thinks that he's feeling pretty confident that they're the number, like a solid number two farm system in all of baseball, even after all those trades.
And that's insane. But I mean, regardless, the Braves don't have that kind of depth. Obviously, the copy fallout, that's a whole other podcast that you can do on Road to Atlanta.
Well, I mean,
point.
Yeah, and graduations too.
And that too, exactly. But regardless, it's a different podcast. But the Braves still have prospects that they could have cashed in at some point. And I think this is honestly just build up from the past as well. That's not giving him, not giving the front office the benefit of the doubt because, you know, again, I've defended the front office. I think they've done a pretty decent job in Anthopoulos' time, but he still has never
free agent signings have gotten better. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's still good moves that I would point to. Like Marcelo Ozuna is working out great. Josh Donaldson worked out great. There's all kinds
Will
of things
Smith,
that
so
they've
much.
Done. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, Scott, I think tweeted this today. The fact that the Braves have, under Anthopoulos, have given out essentially one long-term deal, and it was Will Smith. It's just another incongruous thing because you don't give out multi-year deals to relievers. That's the one position where you don't give out multi-year deals. And the Braves did that, and they won't give out. It's just the plan doesn't make a lot of sense. But the bright side is the Braves are still good without this, and that gives them cover, which is frustrating because we knew coming into today or coming into the weekend anyway. That if the Braves did nothing, they were still a big favorite to win the division and a massive favorite to make the playoffs. And because that is going to happen,
results over process.
Well, that's the thing. Because that's going to happen, there is always going to be a segment that's okay with that. And it's maddening to me. But again, the Braves have not won a playoff series since 2001, and they're in a great spot to do that this year, but less so now than yesterday. I was assuming, frankly, that they would do something. I think basically everyone was. Even the media, even the beat writers were. I think DOB even said it as candidly as that he was assuming they were going to make a move of some kind in the last couple days, and they just didn't do it. And Tommy Malone, I guess, qualifies for that, but not really. and we'll talk about him now. Actually, let's take a break from the rant and talk about Tommy Malone quickly, because the Braves did add a player. We should at least do some analysis on this. Tommy Malone, super cheap, like no money. He's a rental. He was obviously awful in his first start. I will say this about Tommy Malone. Having him start was kind of a bizarre choice.
Yeah, I did not agree with it. That, like, starting, it's like acquiring him and, like, having him drive from Baltimore to Philadelphia.
He flew private, by the way.
Oh, well, whatever. Regardless. I didn't really care if he was, like, shipped FedEx. I mean, like, making him, like, travel and then start a game where, like, he hasn't worked with the catchers at all. He hasn't worked with the team at all. You know, like, in terms of, like, what pitches to throw down with what signs and all that other stuff. Like, I just didn't agree with that. I was like, when people started saying he was going to start, I thought they were kidding. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. Yeah. I mean, like, let's give him a day or two, but nope. They start. And he is not that bad.
No,
he just isn't.
No, here's the thing about Tommy Malone. Obviously his first start, we could probably do a whole podcast on Sunday's game. The Braves take a 10-0 lead and it's like, all right, this is great. And the Tommy Malone was very bad. I wouldn't have started him. Water in the bridge right now. If you're a Braves fan yelling about Tommy Malone because of one start, I would caution you to not freak out. But at the same time, acquiring him was not a splash that made anybody too happy. He's just a pure depth piece. He's not a power guy. You're giving up nothing essentially for him. Two low rated prospects probably. He doesn't walk anyone, but his ERA in the previous four seasons before this year was 5.67. Like, you are hoping Tommy Malone is a number five starter caliber player for you. And granted,
crossing your fingers, that
would be an upgrade on what you've had so far, which I think is that's really what they're trying to do, is just like get through the next month, paper over it, not kill your bullpen, that kind of stuff. And I would have been, everyone would have been okay with that, I think, if they had made another move. But it's unfair to Tommy Malone to think that he's going to be a number three starter in a rotation. That's just not what he is. He's been a reliever at times. He's just not impressive.
If your strategy is not to kill a bullpen, but then not fill the other two rotation spots where you have problems, then
you know what I mean, though?
He's like, just, you're not solving the problem.
Yeah, you're just getting time. I mean, and even then, like, Tommy Malone, his path is kind of like Josh Tomlin's, in that he's been a reliever a lot of the time the last few years. He's a control guy. He's just not impressive. And obviously, Tomlin's been very good in Atlanta for the most part, but you can't. Tommy Malone is thoroughly unimpressive, and that's not his fault. They gave up nothing to get him. Essentially, he's making no money. That move on its face is just fine with me. I had no problem with them trading for Tommy Malone.
Right.
Totally fine. But he doesn't move the needle for you. Like, there's no world in which anyone is excited about Tommy Malone pitching in a playoff series. No world. I know he had a really good ERA in seven starts before he got to the Braves. That's not what he is. I know his walk rate was down. There are some nice signs this year before Sunday. But Tommy Malone is just a guy. He's just a guy. That's fine. And again, they could have used anything better than what they've had. But if it's Tommy Malone or Kyle Wright, I know Kyle Wright's been walking the world, but like, just try Kyle Wright again. I mean, there's not a, because of where the Braves are in the standings, I want them to get weirder, not less weird.
Yeah. They need to kind of be taking some chances and figuring out what they have, and you know, and if that means, and you really don't think that Kyle Wright's going to be there, like, try something else. You've got these pitchers on the 40-man roster. But again, that kind of gets into the rant that I was in earlier in this podcast, which is like, there's no creativity and no risk being taken with this team this year. And it doesn't do your team or your fan base any favors by you treating this season like it doesn't matter as much as other seasons. It doesn't do your team any short-term or long-term good to just let prospects rot on the vine. You're not playing them, and you're not trading them.
Yeah.
And at some point, what are you doing?
Again, I really do think that a lot of the frustration is built up. It's not necessarily just today. I think the way that they've handled the young pitchers for a long time, Scott and I talked about this on a recent podcast, has been pretty maddening. That plays into this too. When you're,
they'll call a guy up and let him sit in the bullpen or sit on the bench for,
or you're giving the most recent example, in my opinion, is the fact that they've had guys like Wright and Tukey on a shorter leash than your Robbie Erlin types. Like, they're willing to give those guys another run, and they're not willing to give your prospects another run who are obviously more talented. And again, no one's saying that Wright and Tukey have been good, because they've been terrible for the most part.
No, they haven't.
But it's not
in the group of terrible pitchers, let's give the ones that are actually talented a chance.
Well, it's upside. At the end of the day, someone was telling me, I won't reveal who it was, but I was talking to somebody about this offline today that is very smart about Braves Matters and is around the team. And essentially the point is, the next month, unless there's an absolute collapse, the next month is just, you're looking for upside for the playoffs. Because the Braves have, again, like a mid to high 90s playoff percentage. The playoffs are weird this year, so you're just looking for, at least in this person's opinion, you should just be searching for upside and trying to find out what could possibly help you in a playoff series. And with all due respect to Robbie Erlin, and, you know, maybe really even Josh Tomlin, who I think is better than Robbie Erlin, but regardless,
I like Josh Tomlin, what he was doing, which is a long reliever.
That's what he should be. And again, I said this before on this podcast, but, you know, try a piggyback. Try a designed piggyback with Kyle Wright and Josh Tomlin, where both guys struggle to go more than twice through the order, so put them together. Try it with two. Like, do something other than what they've been doing so far. Aim for upside and do something else. But this is not what it was. I mean, they just didn't do... I know we're like raving lunatics right now, but it's not a situation where... Listen, I shouldn't say this, but I will. The Braves even if they had traded for a solid starting pitcher, would not have been favored to make the World Series. But they are notably worse now than they would have been if they had done that. And what you are hoping for as a fan is that this is a good baseball team. This is somehow a good baseball team without any pitching other than Max Fried. It's amazing to me that they have the record they have with the starting pitcher they've had.
Like a healthy lead.
It's amazing. I mean, it honestly is amazing that they've been as good as they've been with Max Fried, a few starts of Mike Soroka, and just nothing else. But they've banked those wins. Those wins are not going to go anywhere. And it would have been nice for a team that, again, has not won a playoff series in 20 years to maybe try to push a little bit, not go all in. I'm not telling you they had to trade for Mike Clevinger, but adding someone, like if they traded for Mike Minor, who isn't incredible, like he was pretty good last year, he's not been great this year. Mike Minor is like a number four starter. If you trade for Mike Minor, that would have been a huge upgrade. It really would have been. And that's not sexy at all. But like, it didn't have to be Clevinger or Lynn, but just Dylan Bundy or Trevor Williams or someone like that, who we talked about on the last podcast with Scott. Like someone who is a middle tier starting pitcher that could credibly start game three of a playoff series would have just felt great. And they didn't do that. And they could have done other things too. It didn't have to be a pitcher. I mean, that was obviously the number one hole, and we all agree on that. But they could have gone for a bat to platoon with Adam Duvall in the outfield. They could have gone with another reliever. There was a report about them looking at relievers. They could have added in some way to this team, and they didn't.
There are only so many excuses that any reasonable person is going to be willing to hear for why you just didn't do anything. And look, this past offseason, like, they clearly prioritized retooling and like making sure they reinforced that bullpen. And obviously, once Donaldson moved on, and it looks like a pretty good decision to not have signed him to a long-term deal, at least right now, considering that his calves were already bothering him, and signing Ozuna, those were good moves.
Yep.
They were.
It's working out well.
But how many times, Brad, and this wasn't just Anthopoulos, this was Copy too. How many times did they say, we didn't spend as much money this offseason so that we would have money and we would have flexibility to make moves at the trade deadline if the needs present themselves?
Right.
The Braves lost 80% of their rotation for various reasons, whether it be opt-outs, injuries, in Fulte's case, you know, inexplicably losing 30 pounds and 5 miles an hour on his fastball. You lost all those guys. Soroka's hurt. There's not a clear sign of a need, especially when you, for reasons I can't grasp, refuse to give starting pitching prospects other than ones that have already accrued major league service time a chance at it. And you just didn't do anything other than get a guy from Baltimore that is kind of a starter. I just don't understand. It's hard for me. Like, the explanation of, you know, there's some difficulties with this trade market. I'm not saying there weren't, and I'm not saying they should have made a crazy move, you know, trying to pry a team's number one away from them, because I just didn't see that as ever being a possibility. But just doing nothing and just acting like, you know, this talent that they're not using was worth keeping over talent they would have used. That crawled all over me the wrong way.
I think both of us did not react well to the notion that, you know, they couldn't part with the talent, but that's, they're not playing. It's been weird for a long time, but again, and that's the way to sell this. If they wanted to sell this moving forward, this is what I would advise them to lean into the young guys the next month, whether it be Pache or Wright or Wilson, or even if they like tried Patrick, like try someone else.
Patrick Weigel, Tucker Davidson, De La Cruz.
That'd be a good way to sell it.
Let's get weird.
That'd be a good way to sell it.
I would understand that more.
I honestly don't think they're in. Again, this is not me piling on Robbie Erlin. I don't think that there's a reason to keep trying Robbie Erlin. I would rather see any of the young guys, and that includes Tukey, that includes Wright. That would even include Fulte and Newcomb. All those guys, I would rather see those guys get starts or innings anyway than to keep going with the plug and play options. Like, put Josh Tomlin back where he needs to be as your long reliever. And I know Josh Tomlin's been decent in that. I'm not saying he can't start. If we were in the playoffs, I made this joke last week, but it's really true. If you add, if in a playoff series when it actually matters, the only thing that matters is the current results, you could argue Josh Tomlin would be your number two starter at this moment in time. I wouldn't argue that. Hopefully, and hopefully,
yeah, I was about to say, I don't know if I'd make that argument.
Well, I mean, the only guy that you can argue has a safer baseline right now is maybe Ian Anderson, who's pitched once in his career. Josh Tomlin is better baseline wise than anybody else that they have right now. Because you know what Josh Tomlin is. He's not great, but he won't get you beat in a playoff game. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But the whole point is take shots. Like, aim for upside at this point in time. And if none of them work, then none of them work. And in the playoffs, you can go back to some bullpen game nonsense or hope that Hamels is back or something. But in the next month, use this lead you have, and go.
You need to figure it out now. Yeah.
Well, and this is all bizarre because this year we acknowledge this whole season is so weird and messed up and the whole circumstances surrounding it and the playoff format. But with all that said, there are not a lot of advantages. I know you get to play in your home park for all three games in the first round if you have a higher seed. There is a debate on how much that actually helps you, in my opinion, with no fans, etc. But the gap between once you get past that, even if you can argue that's an advantage, once you're beyond that, there's no advantage for being a higher seed this year. It doesn't really give you that same thing. So if you slide back a little bit, if your record slides because you're trying to take shots, that honestly isn't that big of a deal. Like, it's just not. So just swing.
Yeah. Set yourself up for some upside to try to make a run, because I don't think that anyone sees the Braves making a run when the plan is, you know, Max Fried, who's legitimately very good.
Oh, Ian Anderson,
who we hope is going to be. Yeah. One of the best players in baseball. And then we have Ian Anderson, who we hope is going to be very good. And then basically, and functionally, three bullpen games for the other three spots. Like, even if there's a named starter and there's an intended starter, what ends up happening has been bullpen games. And yeah, that's not going to work.
Okay. To wrap this up, but we can talk about the games. I know that the Braves nearly blew a 10-run lead, which we could have mentioned on Sunday. That was a wild one. They lost Friday and Saturday. Ronald Acuna, by the way, might be out this whole week. Definitely did not play on Monday as you're listening to this with the hamstring. Bowman mentioned that he could be out until Friday. Albie's still not back. Lots of not great injury issues. But the last thing I wanted to ask you, Eric, is looking ahead, take away from the deadline. I mean, how do you view this team in the prism of trying to make the World Series? I mean, we talked around it. We've mentioned it, but that's what it comes down to for me. I know this season's so weird, but the real impact is that they had a chance to improve their odds to make the World Series, and they did not do that. And honestly, it is hard for me, even with all the caveats out there about how weird the season is, the short series, anything can happen. It is hard for me to see how this team, as constructed, is able to beat three teams in a row to make the World Series.
Well, I think my bigger issue is what teams they're probably going to have to beat. Because, look, I think the Braves are the best team in the NL East. I just do. Even with their rotation issues, all these other teams in the NL East have issues as bad, if not worse, in other places on their roster, or in the same, for that matter. I mean, there's some of these rotations haven't looked particularly good. So I think they're the best team in the NL East. Would you pick the Braves to win a three-game series against the Cubs right now?
Who's pitching for the Braves?
You got Fried going one.
A three-game series against the Cubs.
It's debatable.
Probably not, but it would be close. That's a very close one, and I would have
the Cubs and the Braves are in the same tier.
They're basically, yeah, you know, they're very similar teams right now. And the fact,
like run differential,
their pitching is better than the Braves because they actually have two guys in Hendricks and Darvish that are real pitchers, and the Braves had one. But yeah, that's a coin flip series. Essentially, in a three game series, that's a coin flip.
Would you pick them in a series against the Dodgers?
Absolutely not.
No. Would you pick them against the Padres, who were already good?
No. Now the Padres, who were already really good, the Padres adding, as long as Mike Clevinger is Mike Clevinger, which there is some question about that, if he shows himself to be Mike Clevinger, then no. Because they've already been, you know, Lamet's been incredible this year. They still have Paddock, who's really talented. They have Zach Davis, who's been really good. I mean, the Padres are more talented than the Braves are right now, I think.
And their lineup top to bottom is better.
That's what I mean. Like,
it just is.
Their lineup depth is really good. They have star power with Tatis. They've got, yeah, I'm not saying the Braves are like a huge underdog against the Padres. The Dodgers,
and they could beat them. Yeah.
Oh, certainly. And the Dodgers are still the best team in the National League. But if you're asking me to put my life on the line right now in a playoff series between the Braves and the Padres, if Clevinger is bad, it gets closer. But if Clevinger is Clevinger, then it's the Padres, I think.
So I just named three teams where at the very least it's a coin flip, but they're not favored. And that's not including series against the Cardinals, where it doesn't seem to matter how good they actually are. Oh, the Braves can't beat them.
I mean, Braves are better than the Cardinals. So I know the voodoo stuff's out there. The Braves are better than the Cardinals. Listen, I think you picked the three teams that are the best three teams in the National League other than the Braves on that list on purpose. And that is a good exercise. The Braves will be favored even with their disaster pitching. I think they're favored over everybody else. But the potential exception, I'm trying to find a potential exception. Unless,
it depends if like Milwaukee or Cincinnati gets going. Like if Cincinnati ends up with a winning record, then you have to go get like a Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer.
Right, they have
like
better pitching. Same thing. I mean, I was tempted to say Washington because they have the voodoo magic and they have the pitchers, but Strasburg's out. No, there's not anybody else. So, yeah, again, the Braves are still good. Like, no one's saying they're bad.
Yes.
It's just that in a playoff series, especially a short playoff series when Freak only pitch once, that's bad, man. Like, you're going to be the underdog in two. I mean, okay, Vegas, let's go Vegas style right now. Three-game series. If you just priced every game, the Braves will be, like, maybe a slight favorite in game one against a team like, not even the, even with Freed, they'll probably be the underdog against the Dodgers in a game, which is a separate point. But even if you say Freed is a slight favorite.
Well, the Dodgers
favorite,
are insane.
Yes. But even if you said Freed was a slight favorite in game one, the Braves are the underdog flat out in game two and game three against most teams without Freed available.
Yep.
So that's, you get into a weird math situation where it's tough. And we said this when Circle went down. Like, I came on that night and was pretty somber about it. But now we know that the deadline has passed. And yes, there's a world in which Ian Anderson is just awesome this year. He showed what he's got in his first start. We all hope that continues again. And if that is real, swings. Because if Ian Anderson, and we'll know a lot more about him with five more starts, if he's still looking like the guy we saw the other night, that does change things, to be sure. But with all respect to his prospect status and his talent, a guy that's thrown one major league start is not going to be someone that I can tell you that you can bank on being good right now. You do not know that to be the case. You don't. Not even you, Eric, prospect guru that you are.
No.
You don't know that. No one can tell me that Ian Anderson is bankable right now. I know he's talented. I know he pitched well on one start, and it won't surprise me if he's good. But it wouldn't matter if he was the greatest pitcher prospect in the world. If you've thrown one start in the major leagues, I can't tell you that you're going to be good. This season.
Yeah.
I'm saying this season, not long term, this season.
Yeah.
So, and he's obviously the number one hope, but you're right. I mean, we should at least say that out loud. If Anderson is good, like capital G good, that does change all of what we've said previously. The Braves still have holes, even if he is good, because you still have two pitchers.
And it's still scary. Yeah, you still have... It's still scary for a postseason series, but you feel better for sure.
One, and that's why when he pitched that gem before it, I know Scott and I mentioned this. I think we also did after. Like, yeah, man, it'd be great if Ian Anderson pitched well because, you know, not trying to put much pressure on him, but the Braves kind of need him now, which is not a place you want to be. You don't want to have to need a guy making his second major league start this week. We'll see.
But they do.
I had to ask you about the World Series because honestly, at the end of the day, that's the goal. I mean, I know winning a playoff series would feel like a win, and it really would, especially now with all of the turmoil this year. If the Braves simply didn't lose in the first round, it would feel like a win.
It would feel nice. I don't care if it's the best 2 of 3 in the expanded playoffs. I don't care. It would just feel good.
It would feel good to win a playoff series. But at the end of the day, my final thought is that it is frustrating. I can see all sides. Trust me, I can try to understand what the Braves were trying to do by not trying to overpay. I'm a big value guy. I'm a big, you know, calculation of like what's good, present versus future, all that stuff. What I can't understand is why they did nothing. And I stand by that. If you want to say that that's us being negative, that's fine. I'll take that. But the team, I'm sure they had an opportunity. And I'm always someone who points out that we don't know what the negotiations are. Maybe in real life, they were just being like held up at gunpoint, basically, by these teams who knew had a need.
People knew that they needed arms.
That's at least like a non-zero chance that happened. And if that happened, apologies to Anthopoulos. But with only what we know, public information, I have a hard time saying that it's anything other than disappointment that they made no trades today or the last couple of days to improve this team. And I'm still going to knock on wood and hope Tommy Malone turns it around and hope Ian Anderson's really good and hope they can find something from Fulte or Wright or Tukey or whoever. But at the moment, I have a hard time with anyone who feels good about the rotation because, like, there's no evidence to feel good about the rotation.
Yeah. You know, some small wrinkles of optimism, but you know, until we start seeing some different,
listen,
some Eric, different names.
Mike Fultonavich put on some weight and he's throwing 94 again. Get excited.
Yeah, well, I'll believe that it's worth watching when I see it.
Get excited. Yeah, I don't know. I do mean this. If you ask me who I wanted to start this week between Robbie Earl and Mike Fultonavich, I would choose Fulte. I'll tell you that right now. So at least Fulte has the ability. Ooh. At least Fulte has the, I'm not saying to win a game right now. I'm saying to set the stage for the future. I would just let Fulte go out there and see what you got. But could be difference of opinion. Notice I did not say,
I don't know if I disagree. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms.
Well, I mean, that's what I said before. Like,
yeah,
I know the prospects are the easier sell, like you're Wright and whoever, Wilson or Weigel, but you know, flat out, Fulte has more upside than Tomlin and Erlen. He just does. So I wouldn't mind seeing it. When he got DFA'd, I would have been surprised. But I also assumed, Derek, that they would do something at some point to add to the rotation, and they had not done that. So,
and they didn't.
All right. Well, we've done enough ranting. This is a very out of character podcast for us. We usually have like a structure and we talk about topics.
Yeah.
And,
well,
like,
the game, this is the game we're talking about. This is just,
we usually just like give, you know, back, you know, go through, I have my little note thing. We talk about stuff and I will give both sides and we'll try to be even handed. Not today. Hot take podcast by us. Hopefully the Braves succeed. We are still hoping for them to do well, but, a maddening day, I would say, if you are a Braves observer.
Absolutely. Just very, very frustrating. Doesn't mean the team's bad.
Yeah, they're still good because at this moment, just as a final sign-off, as a reminder, 538 gives the Braves a 97% chance to make the playoffs and a 78% chance to win the division. And those numbers are quite good. So,
yep.
It could be worse. All right, Eric, anything to plug on the pod today? I know we have tons of content at talkingchop.com. I know it was not the big splash we all wanted, but they're still planning to read, so catch up on that. But anything else you got to plug, Eric?
Nothing in particular that's in the hopper right now. You know, obviously Wayne's been doing his, you know, prospect retrospectives, you know, talking about like prospects of yesteryear. Christian Bethencourt, I believe, was the last one that went up. And you know, we've got some things that are kind of, we're batting around in terms of prospect content, but nothing that's like imminent. But we're going to have to kind of think about some new stuff shortly because some of the other things we're working on, we've kind of wound down over time.
Yeah. Plenty to catch up on, though, and we'll still be here. I'm still planning to do at least one podcast, if not multiple, on a weekly basis in this space. And crazily, we're a month from the playoffs. That's how weird this all is. The playoffs will be starting in a month from now, and then we'll go back to, like, daily, as long as the Braves are involved. And, plenty of content in the hopper. So please subscribe to the podcast. Check out Eric's stuff. Check out the site. See you next time.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.